Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Happy Monday, everybody. Welcome into Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are on the Game Nashville app. We are on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, all of those things. As I hit the mic.
Mic test. 1, 2.
Mic test. There it is.
Hot mic. Got a hot mic here.
Hot mic. How you doing, Willie?
I'm all right.
Darren McFarlane off today, so just Chase and Willie and Elijah here with you. Fun weekend for sure. We got a lot to get into. Some coaching changes around college football as those jobs continue to get filled. I just kind of want to start with that, to be honest with you. Like, the two biggest jobs that were left were because of surprise moves. Oklahoma, Lincoln Riley going to USC, Notre Dame because Brian Kelly got a Southern accent and went to LSU. And so those two were left open. And, you know, congrats to Marcus Freeman for going to Notre Dame and Brent Venables for going to Oklahoma. But I was a little underwhelmed. You know, I thought that, we'd seen Lane Kiffin, you know, jump or – you know, some other, you know, maybe bigger names. I mean, I know Venables has kind of been out there for a while, but I think the biggest surprise of this entire college football coaching carousel was that all these schools just decided, hey, let's pony up and just keep these guys. And nobody, you know, there were only a couple of big defections, the ones we just talked about.
I feel like Russell Crowe in Gladiator, Maximus, saying, are you not entertained? Like, was this not entertaining enough for the media? Is that what it was? But I look, I've always said this. The right guy for your job isn't always the sexiest name that you could pull from another big program and throw a lot of money at. Time will tell, but there's plenty of history of finding the right guy, moving up, and you think this is the right guy for your team. I'll give you a couple examples. I say this one all the time. I had never heard of Jim Tressel when he got the Ohio State job. When they fired Jim Cooper and he couldn't beat Michigan, Ohio State was winning a lot of games. They just couldn't beat Michigan.
Right.
So everybody's like, all right, you got to get better than Jim Cooper. Look, you got to go get this guy or this guy, this guy. They hired Jim Tressel. And even, I would have to say, a lot of people that follow Ohio State were like, really? That's the guy? You're going for Jim Tressel? And he was at Youngstown State winning a lot at that level. But at the time, what did that mean? It certainly wasn't a real sexy hire. So I really think sometimes it's the best way to go, even though it doesn't, quote, win the press conference and have everybody buzzing around college football. It's also, quite honestly, a much better economic move when you get down to it.
Yeah, no, it's a very good point. So those jobs,
now you got to know what you're looking for, and you got to make sure this is the right guy. Now, I don't know if Venables can come in and attack the unique situation that Oklahoma is in, because not only is Oklahoma a state where you've got to go out and get players from pretty wide boundaries, but now you have to put that equation into the SEC down the road. That is a massive challenge. That is not an easy job.
And there is another job that is now opened as of about 19 minutes ago. Miami has fired Manny Diaz.
Well, isn't that we could see that coming for weeks, but also
they had to get the AD.
Was that really the classy way to do that?
No.
Manny Diaz played for Miami. They had him twisted in the wind. They didn't have a bad year in my mind. Not a bad year.
Well, and you know, King got hurt and all of that, but if I were an alum of a like, okay, let's just use this for an example. I went to MTSU. If I had played football at MTSU and I identified MTSU as my dream job, even though it would be my dream job and I went there, it's like you know when you take that job, you're most likely going to leave by getting fired. That's how that profession works. And so you have to accept that, and when there's a leadership change, like there was at Miami, you know, everybody just kind of saw it coming. So it is unfortunate, but this is what everybody kind of knew what was going to happen. And now Miami's made this move today. The guy that had said, yeah, if that job opens up, I'll take it, has got a new contract at Ole Miss.
But that's not the story, though, right? Isn't they've been secret, not secretly, it's been wide open. They've been negotiating with Cristobal from Oregon to take this job. So I have to believe that it's just gone to the next. Things the next are, thing we're going to hear in the next hour is Cristobal signs with Miami, right?
Things are lining up. Things are lining up how with something that I think is going to happen. If Cristobal takes Miami, which it would appear that's what it's going to be, Oregon opens up.
Dan Mullen to Oregon?
I could totally see that.
Yeah,
that'd be a fit. I think that would be a fit.
Wouldn't be out of the realm. Now, let me ask you this question. Do you think that going to Miami from Oregon is a step up?
No.
Maybe even a step down?
No, it's like I said a few weeks ago. If Lane Kiffin left Ole Miss and the SEC to go to Miami, I think Ole Miss right now today is a better program than Miami overall. Now, I get it. They play in the SEC West, which is the toughest division in football, and the odds of winning that division and winning the SEC because you have to deal with Alabama are obviously slim, but I still think it's a better program, and ultimately so did he.
Well, I think it's arguable. I see Miami as a place that has got a better pathway to the championship than Ole Miss, if you can do it right. Now, the question is, at Miami, do you have to just push all the buttons, break all the rules to get that good the way they've been in the past? But in terms of talent and the conference you play in, I just think if you're trying to make the playoffs, now who knows if they do get to 12 eventually, but that's still, you know, they came out with stuff over the weekend that it's still going to be a few years before this thing ever goes to 12. Like 2024 at the earliest, is that basically what they said?
Pretty much.
So, you know, that's eons from today if you're a head coach.
Not Egon
the Terrible. One of my favorite Christmas specials, but
I was thinking Egon of Ghostbusters, but
oh, Egon, yeah, that's a good one too.
Do re mi Egon.
But you know, Ole Miss is going to be challenging. So I think Ole Miss did very well to hold on to Lane Kiffin.
And Lane cashed in. I mean, this was the year for him to do that, either cash in somewhere else or cash in at Ole Miss. And listen,
it's become a yearly thing with coaches. And that's what's wrong. Jay Billis pointed out, he got hammered by some people, but Jay Billis just pointed out the insanity of Manny Diaz was the coach over the weekend. He's still under contract. He's still the coach of Miami, and it's open negotiation that everybody knew about, saying, hey, Mario Cristobal, would you come to Miami? Cristobal is still the coach at Oregon. They just had a pretty good year. They were in playoff contention until about 2 weeks left in the season.
So get this.
That's the insanity of the college coaching carousel. So it's going to continue to get crazier and crazier because the price tag keeps going up, where you solidify your spot if you have a good year. They feel forced to re-up you. And at the same time, you can still leave at any time as long as you're willing to pay the buyout.
So Chris Vanini points this out. $8 million to buy out Manny Diaz. $9 million to buy out Mario Cristobal at Oregon. $8 million for Cristobal's salary. Miami has never come close to paying this kind of money. This is a complete shift in athletics and football support.
But, of course, we're in a pandemic, and now we've got to cut two other sports or cut people in the athletic department so we can do this stuff. It's just
they don't care about that.
It's so dumb.
I know.
Makes no sense.
But they don't care. So that's
obviously not.
That's just what it is.
And honestly, Is there any guarantee that Cristobal does better than Manny Diaz?
No, not at all.
Definitely not.
I mean, I'll be honest. Like, he's done an okay job at Oregon, but I don't know what the shine on Mario Cristobal is. I mean, he's
done okay.
He's okay, but yeah. I don't think he's $8 million.
What's he done? Honestly, what's he done?
Yeah,
to get that kind of money.
I mean, they just lost.
They're exciting names that are in the right place at the right time. And congratulations to them. If you're willing to deal with the stress and moving your family all over the place and deal with that, you get all that money, okay. Like Dan Mullen, nobody's really going to feel sorry for him with the money he's being paid not to coach.
Sure.
It's just an insane business.
So the college football playoff, Alabama rolls, pun intended, in the SEC title game against Georgia. So they are the number one seed. Michigan rolls against Iowa. They are the number two. Georgia falls to three. And for the first time in the college football playoff era, a group of five school gets in, the Cincinnati Bearcats, at number four. So Alabama will play Cincinnati. Michigan will play Georgia in the semifinals on New Year's Eve.
I'm just going to remind you of something that I said. Elijah was there. You were there. Unfortunately, Darren is not here today. I was in Edmonton, Alberta, and it was the
lovely place.
Lovely place. Had a great view of the downtown, looking out on the city. It was the day after the very first rankings came out. And everybody was like, congratulations to the committee. They had Cincinnati 8th or whatever it was. They haven't done anything. They're not going to make it. Cincinnati doesn't deserve to. And what did I say that day? You forgot.
So you said
so
again.
I'll remind you. I said, just keep winning.
Yep.
If you keep winning, you'll get in. And you guys, they haven't played anybody. They barely beat Tulsa and all these
that
things.
That was more Darren saying that. I mean, I was like, eh. No,
but you were kind of leaning towards Darren. Darren was the outspoken one, and I'll deal with Darren when he gets back.
Deal with Mr. I will, Sass.
Don't worry. I'm not going to miss my chance to remind him of this.
Yeah, but you know what he's going to say.
And even Friday, we were still debating, and I was saying this. I was saying, if you are going to say that this is a tournament that all schools are eligible for, and a team goes undefeated, as Cincinnati did, and has a signature win at Notre Dame, who finished 5th, then it should be a no-brainer. And everything did fall so that there was really no discussion. When Alabama won, it was a pretty easy decision for the committee, I would have to imagine. But Cincinnati is well-deserving. Now, they could get throttled in the first
game. That's going to be the key. That is going to be the key. If they beat Alabama, then they're going to shut everybody up. Even no matter what else happens, if they beat Alabama, which I think they can. Now, Alabama's got their mojo back after what they did to Georgia. But if they beat Alabama, no matter what happens, they shut everybody up. But that's what you're going to hear from Darren. That's what you're going to hear the next few weeks is, yeah, okay, they're going to get throttled by Alabama.
But there are plenty of blowouts in the semifinal. If you go back through the years, there's almost a blowout every year.
Yeah.
There's usually the fourth team is a big underdog, regardless of who it is. There's been some embarrassing performances.
I know, and we want 12.
What's that?
And people want 12. They want 12 teams in. And
yeah. Well, you're not going to get away from that even with 12. But what I'm saying is the fourth team, generally speaking, is a sizable underdog most years. And there have been some teams that have been overmatched. Notre Dame, a couple of times, has been in that situation. Clemson got crushed one year by Alabama. So it could happen to Cincinnati. But I'm patting myself on the back, yes, because Cincinnati deserved to be in there. Quite honestly, the committee was taken off the hook because there was really nobody else you could put in. Would you agree with that? It wasn't even a debate.
Yeah, no.
By the end of the day.
No.
The way
I think they got it right.
Now, if Oklahoma State had won, that might have been a pretty interesting discussion. But
if Oklahoma State had won, there's an argument, but I still think Cincinnati.
I still think Cincinnati would have gotten it. Yeah.
Now the key would have been if Georgia had won.
Yes, that would have gotten hairy.
Does Alabama
a two loss Alabama versus Cincinnati, and that's what we debated on Friday.
And I see the argument for both at that point.
Well,
but
now we're going to see it play out of the field.
Yeah.
And Alabama. And I don't think I would have argued that. Alabama is a stronger team. Mm-hmm. They're a better team. But it's who deserves to get there in the system that you've put into place. You've got to be fair if you're allowing all these teams to play for a championship. Otherwise, it's a sham.
It just shows you how truly great Nick Saban really is. That everybody's called this the worst team he's had since the first year at Alabama. That this is... you know, they're underwhelming in the defense, and then they lost to Texas A&M, and you know, they barely beat Auburn. I mean, they you know, all these things, and they've been close in games. So it's the worst team that he's had since he's been there. Yet they're sitting there with one loss. They just won the SEC, and they're the number one seed going into the playoff. I mean, it's amazing that he continues to do things at that level. And listen, I said it on Friday that for Kirby Smart in Georgia, there was something extra because he wanted to beat Saban. Well, he's probably going to get another shot at it. If things happen the way I think they're going to, it's going to be Alabama, Georgia in the national championship, and he's going to get another shot at it.
Yeah, I thought a lot about over the weekend.
I want to know if that sticks with him.
Yeah, I thought about this a lot over the weekend with Kirby Smart, because he's going to get a lot of criticism this week, and this is, again, part of the job. But I thought about this when I picked Alabama, at least with the points, in our pick six. And my thinking was, first of all, Alabama is going to bring their best. I've seen great matchups between those two teams. Why would this be any different? But also, Georgia didn't have to win the game. They, even though it's an SEC championship, Georgia knew going in, we can lose and still be in the championship. That's got to be a little bit of something in the back of their mind. Alabama had to win to get in. That's a big psyche advantage for Alabama. The problem is Georgia could have eliminated Alabama from the equation and missed their chance to do it. Now they're going to have to beat them again. But I do think part of the human psyche is sometimes you're like, oh, well, like if there's no urgency of, well, I don't have to get this done today, like with our homework, right? Mm-hmm. My homework's due on Friday. Do I do it tonight on Monday? Heck no, I'm not doing it on Monday. I'm waiting until Thursday night at midnight to do it. That was
exactly.
Me anyway.
Yeah, I was so the same way.
I think Georgia might have had a little bit of that, whether consciously or subconsciously.
So New Year's Day, or New Year's Eve, I keep saying New Year's Day. New Year's Eve, which I don't agree with. I don't know why they do these on New Year's Eve.
Oh,
they should do these
move.
On New Year's Day. But Cincinnati, Alabama, the 2:30 game in Arlington at Jerry's World, and then that night at 6:30, Georgia will take on Michigan in the Orange Bowl down in Miami. So that is set. Also set Thursday, December 30th at 2:00 right here in Nashville at Nissan Stadium. Purdue will take on Tennessee. So the guy that people thought was going to be the Vols coach, Jeff Brohm.
Oh, isn't
and he never
great.
Got an offer with Purdue. We'll take on Josh Heupel and Tennessee. I think this is big for the Transperfect Music City Bowl to get Tennessee.
Oh,
here,
I love
right?
it.
Coming off the pandemic, not having it last year, you know that place is going to be orange. I don't know what Purdue's going to bring. A couple of years ago when they were here, I guess it was 2018. I thought they
had a pretty good.
It was okay.
Pretty good. It was a good crowd for that game. It was unfortunate the game just got away very, very early. It was a very lopsided game. But
you know, I'm going to give my commentary for a second. I was really hoping it was going to be Penn State, Tennessee. I think that would have been huge.
That would have been a home run. But this is a good, solid double, triple.
Sure.
I think.
This is fine.
I think it's a gapper. Are you waving the guy to third or
yeah.
are you holding him at second?
Yeah, but I wanted Jimmy Frank back in Nashville. That was really what I wanted.
But the Brohm thing is pretty juicy.
Yeah. Oh.
And Purdue's a good team.
Yeah. And you know, we've had great conversations with Jeff Brohm over the years, so we for sure will get him on. So there you go. The Bowls are all set, all 135 of them.
And we'll get more of this with Vince Ferrar. He's going to join us at 12:30. We'll talk about the Tennessee situation.
So coming up next, we'll shift gears, talk a little Predators with Adam Vingan. Teron Davenport will join us at 11. Mike Vrabel going to speak at 11:45. As Willie mentioned, Vince at 12:30, and then we'll get Zingers at 1:00. We'll come back with Adam Vingan. But first, Willie, tell us about Lee Company.
All right, Lee Company, 615-567-1000. Temperature fluctuating a lot these days. We had the storms, all that stuff. There may be a number of reasons why you want to call Lee Company, 615-567-1000. Whether it's maintenance, maybe you had some issues in the backyard with all of the storms that rolled through here. Maybe it's just your heater's not running as efficiently as you want it to be right now. It's not working quite right, and you're wondering what's going on. Well, check it out. Call Lee Company, 615-567-1000. And when you get them there, ask about the home maintenance plan. It's a great year-round service that they provide for a small monthly fee. You get free checkups each and every year on your heating, cooling, plumbing, and electrical systems. And when they find things that need to get fixed, and they'll find the little problems often, before they become big problems, and that's a good way to go, you get discounts on those repairs. 615-567-1000 or LeeCompany.com. Lee Company, proud sponsor of the Nashville Predators.
Back here, Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5, The Game. The great Pete Weber on the call there as the Predators get the overtime win against the Montreal Canadiens on Saturday night. Chase McCabe, Willie Donick here with you, Darren, with the day off. And we say hello to Adam Vingan. Adam, I acknowledge you. Welcome in.
Thank you. I heard Darren on the morning show, so he just did a spot and now he's off?
I guess. He's got back issues, so I don't know. I don't know what's going on. But hopefully he feels better and he's back with us tomorrow. So
okay, well, we've got a special. Arlo is here to fill in if necessary.
Arlo, my man. I love Arlo. Okay, so you did your mailbag on The Athletic. And, of course, you were asked about the Predators Stadium Series jersey. I just admitted to Willie that when I first saw it, I was like, okay. You know, like, there's a lot. There's a lot going on. And I saw your tweet about using a slogan as a crest, and I agree with you on that. But as a little time has passed, it's growing on me. I'm kind of getting used to it. I like the Navy. But what were kind of your overall thoughts and what's some response that you've gotten?
Well, the response has been overwhelmingly negative. My colleague at The Athletic, Scott Wheeler, tweeted, and I include this in the mailbag, that jersey may go down as the worst uniform ever created in the 100-plus year history of the National Hockey League. Now, I won't go that far.
Yeah, I won't go that far.
I don't love it. First of all, I know that Predators fans have been clamoring for a Navy alternate jersey since the previous Navy alternate jersey was retired, what, 10 years ago, 10, yeah. 12 years ago? And I know that a lot of Predators fans have a soft spot for that Navy alternate jersey. First of all, Stadium Series jerseys tend to be loud. You know, they have the big graphics and the big numbers. So in terms of how this jersey fits in with other Stadium Series jerseys, it's, you know, par for the course, so to speak. But, you know, I like you said, Chase, I don't love that a marketing slogan is the front of the jersey. You know, I know that Smashville is what the team likes to call it, atmosphere, but I very rarely, and this is just me, I very rarely hear fans refer to Smashville. You know, if it were up to me, I like the idea of the jersey. I would have put Preds on the front instead of Smashville. The Tampa Bay Lightning are wearing a jersey that says Bolts on it. We've seen other teams do that. We've seen the Capitals use Caps, the Hurricanes use Canes, we've seen the Senators use Sens. I think you could use Preds because that's how most people refer to the team. So to me, that's the one major issue I have with the uniform, is I just think that it was a questionable decision to use a marketing slogan as the primary crest of a jersey.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Let's talk about the play on the ice. Ellie Tolvanen, and I know he came up in your mailbag as well, he finally gets on the board the other night, albeit, I think, right place, right time for him. But he hasn't been scoring, and everybody's been waiting for that to happen. And, you know, hopefully this is that confidence boost that he needs, because it feels like that it's been a little shaky. Because they need him to score. David Poile is on our show every week and always brings up secondary scoring. You need secondary scoring, and Tolvanen falls into that. So where are you on him right now?
Well, at first it was big for him to get that goal. You know, as we all know, he scored on his first shot of the season against the Seattle Kraken and then went 0 for 61 before tipping in that shot from Mattias Ekholm to open the scoring against the Canadiens. And you know, Ellie said last week that he feels like he's playing the best hockey he's ever played. And he's not only referencing you know, his scoring chance generation, but he thought he was playing well away from the puck in the defensive zone. He thought he was playing well on the forecheck. And the numbers bear that out. You know, John Hines said last week in reference to Tolvanen and Philip Tomasino that when you have a younger player who's offensive minded and those players aren't scoring, the first thing you look at is the scoring chances drying up? And for both players, they're not. You know, before the game, they were fourth and fifth on the team in quality chances in all situations, according to Sportlogic, before the game on Saturday, that is. So they were still creating chances despite not scoring, and that is why John Hines felt comfortable keeping those guys in the lineup and in prominent positions in the top six. So, you know, Ellie said that he felt like when the first one goes in, it was going to be like a snowball effect, and we'll see. Because we know that he can score in bunches. And look, a question I was asked in the mailbag is should we be concerned, we being Predators fans, that Ellie Tolvanen is a bust? And I don't like throwing that term around for a 22-year-old player. Is Ellie Tolvanen ever going to live up to the hype that preceded his arrival in the NHL? No, most likely not. But he can still be a useful player. And, you know, hopefully for him, that goal the other night was the first of many to come to make up for the drought that he had.
Adam Vingan is with us. Adam, let's take a little further with the analytics that you threw out there, because we were trying to dig in as much as we could as well, because we were hearing the same things that you were from John Hines, encouraged about his play away from the puck. To me, these are all things that are good for the long term in terms of where you see him down the road. To me, he's going to be far from a bust. I think he's still got a chance to be a very, very good player, because we still haven't seen him go on that role. When you see the puck come off of his stick, just the eye test, you know that he should go on a roll where stuff just starts going in, where he starts beating goaltenders. It just hasn't happened yet. But just by our count, we looked at the Sport Logic stuff, and with his expected goals and actual goals, he was the second most unlucky player in the league next to Kevin Fiala, based on the chances that he had gotten, the quality of chances, right? So there's got to be a little bit of luck in there. And like you said, Chase, you know, he got a lucky tip, but that's being in the right. That's part of being a goal scorer, is you get those tips. So finally he got one to bounce his way, and he was overdue for that.
Yeah, and, you know, when you look at his, before the game the other night, when you look at his actual goals versus his expected goals, I think he was like almost four goals below expected.
Right.
And, you know, to me, so far this season, Ellie Tolvanen sort of reminding me of Matt Duchene last season. You know, Matt Duchene was insistent that he was doing all of the right things and just not scoring. And I think when you dig into the numbers, that was you know, validated. You know, Matt Duchene was doing a lot of good things offensively last year in terms of creating scoring chances for himself, but wasn't able to score. Now, of course, we're seeing the complete opposite of that, where he's playing, you know, he's scoring a ton of goals above expected, and is, you know, a regression of some kind is expected. So I see Ellie Tolvanen similarly to how I saw Matt Duchene last year so far this season. You know, the chances are there. Like I said, and like John Hines has said to you and us, you know, if you were to look at those numbers and Ellie Tolvanen wasn't generating anything, then you should be concerned. But he was. And I know that at the end of the day, you know, you and I really were analytically inclined, and sometimes we lean on those things maybe too much, and sometimes fans will say, all that matters is him putting the puck in the net. It doesn't matter what the math says. And that's true. I mean, he is paid to be a goal scorer, and he's going to need to score. But even after the game the other night where he scored, he's shooting 3% this season.
That's like, unbelievably that's low. I mean, he was in the 2% until he scored that goal the other night. I mean, that's a milk carton.
So, I mean, at some point, you knew that it was going to work in his benefit. It was going to turn around. So, you know, I think it's, you know, it's always about marrying the two when it comes to the eye test and the analytics. The eye test suggested that Ellie Tolvanen was playing better than his, I mean, the analytics suggested he was playing better than the eye test and the boxcar statistics were telling us. And now he gets the goal, which is good. And we'll see if that continues, because we saw last year in the middle of the season, there was a stretch of games in the middle of last season where Ellie Tolvanen was, you know, the offensive, you know, generator for the Predators. You know, you think of that game against Dallas where he scored the overtime goal. You know, he had some big goals against Tampa, you know, in the regular season. You know, he was doing a lot of damage on the power play, which he hasn't done as much this year. So, you mean, you're hoping that, you know, he's on his way up. And it doesn't matter how you score the goal. It's just that it goes in finally. So, you know, for the first time in almost 2 months, he gets a goal. There's nothing wrong with that.
It's one of the most talked about subjects, as you know, Adam, about the team, is him. So I'm going to throw one more out there for you. With the goal, as you mentioned, his shooting percentage is now at 3% for the season. So it was getting to a point where the shooting percentage couldn't go much lower, right? Having scored on his first, you just do the math, you could you know, it's going to be down there. But he only went up to 3% after scoring a goal. He has 66 shots on the season so far, 66 on goal. You know how many shots did he have last year, the entire season? 65.
I don't know.
Wow.
65.
Okay.
He already has more shots on goal this year in 24 games than he had in 40 last year. So to me, that shows me growth in the game. Number one, he's earning more playing time. Number two, he's getting his shot off more. And it's not like he's not getting quality chances. As you pointed out, Adam, he's got the third best, what did you say, third most quality danger looks or something like that. There's different sites that we go to get these numbers. So, you know, some use different terminology. But the bottom line is the formula is there for him to be just fine and get plenty of goals by the season's end.
Right. So in terms of quality chances, as SportLogic defines them, before the game the other night, the only players on the team that had more were Matt Duchene, Mikael Granlund, Ryan Johansson, and Philip Tomasino. So for Tolvanen, that is. So, you know, he's right up there among the top generators of offense. And, of course, Philip Forsberg missed 9 games, so he wasn't as high up on the list. But, you know, like I said, like everything that the numbers say would suggest that Elie Tolvanen is due for a breakout. And it's up to him to see that through.
And you're right. You at some point, you got to have the results, right? You can't keep talking to me about the stats and stuff like that. At some point, you got to get results. I get that. But
yeah.
Players
exactly.
do go through this, we would acknowledge, right? There
yes,
are pretty
absolutely.
Good players that go through stretches like this.
No, for sure. And we've seen better players than Tolvanen, more accomplished players, higher skilled players go through this than Elie Tolvanen. I mean, I remember having a conversation with, I think we talked about this before. I had a conversation with Mike Johnson, who's an NHL Network analyst, a year and a half ago for a story I was working on. And he made an interesting point. He said there are probably only like 10 or 15 players in the league that are slump proof, like guys that are able to put up points on a regular basis and never go more than a game or two without a point. You think of Connor McDavid, you think of Leon Draisaitl, you know, for example, you know, so they're, you know, outside of maybe 10 or 15 players league wide, you know, everybody's going to go through these scoring droughts. So, you know, Tolvanen is not special in that regard. It's just, as you said, there comes a point where we can throw all of these numbers out there and say, oh, he's playing well, but until he scores, you know, at some point people are going to look at us like we're crazy.
Adam Vingan is with us from The Athletic. So I wanted to ask you about Matt Duchene as well, because we talked a few weeks ago when he was hotter than a firecracker, just scoring at will. He's had 4 goals since November 20th, that 3-goal game against Montreal being included in that, but he's still basically a point-per-game player at this point. But you asked the question of, I want to see what it looks like when the goals are not coming in bunches like they haven't been. He is distributing the puck some. He had a couple of games where he didn't have a point. But overall, I still like the play of Matt Duchene. What about you?
Yeah, I do. And that, like when we talked before, that was what I was talking about. Is, you know, oftentimes players that are offensively inclined, you know, when the points aren't on the board, they kind of disappear. And, you know, that's what I was saying about Matt Duchene before. I know that he was playing like a man on fire, so to speak, and there was going to come a time, similarly to basically the opposite of what we're talking about with Elie Tolvanen. There was going to come a time where he wasn't going to score because he couldn't probably keep that pace up, and I'm still a bit impressed. You know, he had, I looked this up because somebody asked me this on that mailbag. You know, he had 9 goals on 27 shots in the 9 games that Philip Forsberg was out of the lineup, so that's 33%. Like, that's not going to make that, he can't maintain that. And I don't think he's been any less aggressive on the ice since Forsberg came back. You know, the question I was asked, you know, the reader insinuated that he thought that Matt Duchene had become more differential now that Forsberg had come back. He had sort of gone back to the pass-first mentality versus trying to attack the net. And I don't have the numbers in front of me, but from what I've seen, I haven't seen that. I still think Matt Duchene has been very aggressive offensively. He's just going through the regression to the mean that we expected. But, you know, he has, you know, for the time being, he has quieted my concerns. You know, I thought he got off to a great start, as we all know, and I was skeptical that once that dried up, was he going to still be an impact player? And I still think he's making impacts away from, you know, scoring goals. So, you know, so far so good. You know, I think my concerns about Matthew Shane have been alleviated for the time being.
In your mind, Adam, when you see this team play against, you know, a team like Montreal, they should win that game. Now, you know, it went to overtime. They needed that, but they still won the game. And I feel like for the most part, they're taking care of the games they need to. There's another section in which these are games that are toss-ups that they've been competing with. But when you see them against a team like Edmonton or Toronto or these upper echelon teams, they're losing those games. So in your mind, what do you need to see differently for them to be more competitive against those upper echelon teams in the NHL?
Well, those upper echelon teams, the difference between the Predators and those teams are, you know, those teams have the players I was referring to as slump proof. You know, they have it. They have Connor McDavid. They have Leon Draisaitl. They have Austin Matthews. They have Mitch Marner. The Predators don't have those players. Now, we know Philip Forsberg can play very well, as he has been as of late. We know Matthew Shane, as we saw earlier this season, can score a lot of goals. You know, but they're not in the same conversation as the players I just mentioned. And you know, I was listening to Darren with Joe and David, and you know, he talked about how, you know, the Predators play a certain style. It's not a flashy style. It's a you know, sort of a throwback to the original Predators, almost heavy on the forecheck, great goaltending, solid defense, and opportunistic offense. And you know, that can work against a lot of teams, but there are going to be teams where you're going to need to be able to, you know, score some goals. And like you said, we've seen them lose. We saw them lose to Colorado as well, a team that hadn't been playing well to start the season, but is starting to get its legs underneath it. And the Avalanche were able to have their way with the Predators a little bit. Both teams are on the second half of a back-to-back with travel in that situation. But you know, that's what I need. Like, that's the difference is, you know, we know Philip Forsberg, you know, can play very well. We know Matthew Shane can play very well. We know Mikael Granlund and Ryan Johansson can play very well. But they're not the elite forwards. And that has always been the biggest difference, I think, between the Predators and the teams that ultimately win the Stanley Cup, is they don't have that forward who can consistently take over games and that, you know, every night, I'm going to get 2 points from Connor McDavid. I'm going to get 3 points from Leon Draisaitl. I'm going to get a goal from Austin Matthews. I'm going to get 3 assists from Mitch Marner. They don't have that player. And that's the conversation we, you know, I think Darren was bringing up too about, you know, I know that David Poile firmly believes in the, hey, if we can get in, anything can happen. But you know, whether or not that is a smart, you know, long-term outlook for planning a team is, you know, up in the air. But that's, to me, the difference, is that they have played, you know, Roman Josi. I forgot about Roman Josi in all of this. You know, Roman Josi has that ability.
He's pretty good.
But, you know, yes, but defensemen aren't typically the players that you think of to do that. You know, it's the forwards, and that's the big difference, I think.
Adam, looking at the picture, and this is, I think, part of the competitive transition, I think they felt like they had enough to win the whole thing a couple years ago. I think right now they're trying to get younger and trying to create some space to where they can get back up to that level one way or the other. But certainly one way is to have those elite forwards that you're talking about. You got to be elite in some category. It's interesting, in the meantime, where they are. I don't think a lot of people had very high expectations of them. It's a very interesting scenario unfolding in the Western Conference where you have very little separation. It looks like there's going to be probably 10 or 11 teams at the end of it for the eighth spot, or for the eight spots that will be available. And so the question is, can you be better than somebody like Winnipeg, St. Louis, Dallas, Anaheim, L.A., San Jose? That's sort of the group of teams that I'm starting to look at. Can Nashville, in the meantime, while they tried to build back and get younger and sort of retool the roster, can they still make the playoffs? That's the needle you're trying to thread.
Yeah, I mean, what are the teams that we can count out of the – that's not pretzel, by the way, Barking. What are the teams that we can cancel out at, you know, Arizona and Vancouver, right? Those are probably the only – unless I'm missing somebody obvious. Those are the only two teams in the Western Conference that I feel like we can say definitively are not in the mix. You know, Seattle's been playing well as of late. You know, Anaheim is playing better than anticipated. You know, there are a lot of teams that are in that mix, like you said, Willie, so it just comes down to, can they be better than a couple of them? And, you know, this road trip is going to be interesting. You know, they're playing a Detroit team that's better than expected, but still a team finding its way. They're playing an Islanders team that's just, you know, in a tailspin right now, and they need to take advantage of that. You know, the Devils, we saw the Devils here a couple weeks ago, and the Predators, I thought, you know, handled them quite easily. And the Rangers are, I think, won 8 in a row, or 8 of 9, 9 of 10. You know, they've been playing really well. You know, so this is a good trip to test themselves against, you know, they're all Eastern Conference teams, but, you know, the Red Wings are a team on the rise. The Islanders are struggling. The Devils are just sort of there, and the Rangers are playing really well. I mean, I think it's going to be a really interesting trip to see how the Predators match up against teams like them in the other conference.
Yep. Detroit has won 5 in a row, by the way. Yeah. They have maybe the 2 best rookies in the league, who right. obviously weren't there last year. They're making a difference.
Theater.
No question. So this is going to be an interesting game.
All right, Adam. You know, go ahead.
No. I was interrupting you. Go ahead.
Well, I was about to wrap things
9,
up.
9-2-2 at home.
If you have another point, go ahead.
Detroit 9-2-2.
I have
home.
No other points. I'm all talked out.
Okay. And so the one thing I was going to say is, if you're Roman Reigns, which is your theme music coming in, does that make Arlo Paul Heyman?
He's my special counsel. He doesn't really offer that much advice.
Not yet,
you know,
at least.
He doesn't talk too much, but you know, I'm like. You know, like I said, this road trip, this is for the first time since March of 2020. I'm heading out on the road to cover the team. I'll be at all 4 games this week, and Arlo and Bridget are coming along. So Arlo's going to be on his first plane this afternoon.
Nice.
So getting ready for that. But yeah, no, he doesn't really have much to counsel me on right now.
Well, he will eventually. And
I'm sure he will.
Just wait for that. Adam, appreciate the time as always. Have fun on the road trip.
All right, guys. Thanks.
Adam Vingan of The Athletic joining us, talking some Nashville Predators with him. And as Willie pointed out, yes, I mean, this is an important road trip. As they start in Detroit, then they go to the New York area to take on the Islanders, the Devils, and then the Rangers before coming back next Tuesday against the Calgary Flames and Colorado Avalanche before hitting the road once again. So an important stretch for the Predators to kind of see where they match up. We'll come back, talk a little bit more about that on the other side as you listen to Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 1025 The Game. Darren, Donick, and Chase presented by Curation CBD. Curation CBD. CBD products curated for life. Chase McCabe, Willie Donick here with you as Darren McFarland out today. You can hit us up on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. If you want to weigh on anything, we'll get to Ron Davenport here in just a little bit. More on the Titans is Mike Vrabel going to speak today, coming off of the bye week. But talking a little NHL and the Predators right now, Willie, last night and today, there's been some moves when it comes to coaching and even front office in some cases with a couple of teams, starting with Vancouver.
Vancouver last night, and this has been brewing for a long time. They haven't liked how they've started the season, and it's been heavily rumored that this was happening, and last night they went ahead and did it. They're 8-15-2. They fired their coach and their GM last night, Travis Green and Jim Benning. They have come in with Bruce Boudreau, and so he will be leaving the NHL Network desk where he's been for the last while.
I don't think that's a bad hire.
Bruce Boudreau has resurrected plenty of programs in the past, and so he's won a lot of games. If you look at his record, he's got a lot of wins under his belt, most recently in Minnesota.
He's got a great moment.
He was with
24-7.
Certainly a charismatic guy, as we saw. But, Washington, Anaheim, Minnesota, he won his share of games. This will be an interesting move there.
Because I think
and
Vancouver,
it's interesting, they throw him in as the coach before they really know who their GM is. Well, they look at Mark Bergevin, who just got fired in Montreal. That's a rumor that's out there.
Yeah, because, Jeff Gorton takes over as in the front office in Montreal. He's going to hire a GM. Danny Briere's name has been batted about as he's been working his way up through. But Bruce Boudreau, to me, is the perfect hire for that Vancouver team, because I think talent-wise, they have it. It's just putting it all together. And
yeah,
he might be the right coach to do that.
That's what they believe, is that there's more talent there and it just hasn't gone well, so they needed a change. I feel bad. Travis Green is a good person. He was just given an extension in the offseason. This is how crazy the job is. Just got an extension. 2 years ago, he was looked like a genius, right? They had all these young players. They were ahead of the curve on their rebuild. They went into the bubble, did some great things, upset the Blues, as I recall, in the playoffs. Everything looked great. And then here we are. He's looking for a job. But I think he's a good coach.
Well, the carousel started because, I mean, you had Chicago make a change earlier this year, Vancouver, and also the Philadelphia Flyers.
The Flyers, what's new? They have an itchy trigger finger. Things don't go well there. They always panic and make a move. Alain Vigneault, as I recall, I think he won the Jack Adams 2 years ago.
Yeah, when he got hired in Philadelphia, I was kind of like, huh, that's an interesting move, but I think he's done well, but not anymore.
And he's gone. So
Mike Yeo replaces him.
Philadelphia's had a lot of injury issues, no question that, you know, they haven't played very well even with who they've got. They made a lot of changes in the offseason, but it's Alain Vigneault's fault, apparently. You can't fire the whole squad, so they let him go. So changes galore around the league after about a quarter of the season where things aren't going your way for some teams. But as Adam mentioned, I think it's a really intriguing road trip coming up for the Predators. We mentioned this. Detroit is way, way better than they were last year. They waited intentionally through last season to bring up their best prospects, and they've got more coming. But Sider and Raymond, these two guys, might be the two best rookies in the league right now. Nashville's never seen them. Detroit is 9-2-2 on home ice. So don't think of the Red Wings as you've thought of them the last couple of years, especially last year when the Predators, to their credit, they wiped the floor for the most part with Detroit, with Chicago, with Columbus, with Dallas for the most part. You know, they did really well against the teams they had to beat to get into the playoffs. This Detroit team is a lot different. So you've got that. You've got a very intriguing situation with the Islanders coming up on Thursday. Barry Trotz and his crew decimated by COVID. Highest of expectations. They've been to the Eastern Final. They've been to the Conference Finals. Whatever you want. I don't know what you call it when they're in the bubble. We were last year. It wasn't East-West, really. But they have been one step away from the Stanley Cup Final for 2 years in a row. A lot of people predicted them. Tops in the East. Thought that this might be their year. All kinds of issues. They are 0-8-3 in their last three games. They lost in Chicago last night. But we know that they're a lot better team than that. They're 5-10-5. And so what kind of environment are you going into on Thursday? The brand new building? Are they going to get right? I don't think they're just going to lay down and the Predators will roll in there. So that's a challenge. Then you have New Jersey the next night on a back-to-back. Mm-hmm. Very interesting up-and-down team. They can look really good.
You handled them here.
Handled them here, but they're much better at home. Jack Hughes didn't play in that game. And then you get the Rangers on Sunday, who have had a fantastic start to the season. They've won six in a row. They're 16-4-3. So great challenges ahead on this road trip.
Mario Cristobal has informed his staff and Oregon that he is leaving the Ducks for Miami.
Oh, what a surprise. You think his team didn't know that at this point?
I think they had an idea.
Good grief.
He can have a three-minute meeting like Brian Kelly did and be okay. Yeah. So,
one other thing I saw just before we close the book on the Predators, because I know we're going to start turning our attention to football at 11. It was reported, and it wasn't a local person that put this up there, that the Predators are going to recall Ben Harper, who's been on a conditioning assignment in Milwaukee. I don't know if that's just time has run out on the conditioning and you either have to call him up or not. But they've also called up Matt Luff, who was a guy that had a really good training camp. They picked him up in the offseason from L.A., a big, solid, power forward kind of guy. Not a big-time scorer, but a guy that's done really well for Milwaukee, a little bit older. He's played a bunch of NHL games in a role for the Kings. I don't know if that means there's an issue on the roster, but they haven't had an extra forward on the roster for a while.
Right.
So it makes me wonder what's up with that. Are you going on the road, just want another guy there, or did somebody get banged up on Saturday that we're not aware of? I guess they're going to practice here pretty soon. We might get a little better picture at that point.
We can look out.
That's not officially been put out there by the team. That's just something that's been reported.
We can keep a lookout for that as well. Speaking of the Predators, you want to win a pair of tickets to see the Preds take on the Calgary Flames at Bridgestone Arena on Tuesday, December 14th. Head over to YouTube, subscribe to the 102.5 The Game YouTube page, and you'll enter for your chance to see the Nashville Predators versus the Calgary Flames live. Once you subscribe, email us at promotions@cromwellmedia.com with your YouTube handle. One winner will be chosen on Monday, December 13th. We'll shift gears. We'll talk some Titans when we come back with Teron Davenport as you listen to Darren Donick and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.